Welcome to Rooster Radio. I'm Andrew Montesi with James Begley. Today we get insights into the future of work and workplace culture with Jody Walton and Danny Beig. Jody and Danny are co-founders of Harrison McMillan, recognised as Australia's most innovative agency by SEEK in 2016, and a great entrepreneurial story. Harrison McMillan is changing the game through a new pay-as-you-go business model and also through its own firm culture. At the Harrison McMillan office, digital detoxes, enforced lunch breaks, and flexible working hours are standard. Sounds great in theory, but it's much more challenging in practice. Jody and Danny explain the science behind it, how they measure the success of the initiatives, and how they ensure peak performance for their clients. In fact, they've had over 120 clients nationally in under 4 years, so their approach is clearly being embraced as an alternative in the recruitment market. Recruitment is a tough gig for candidates, employers, and recruiters themselves. Jody and Danny talk about how the industry is changing and also share important tips for job seekers who want to separate themselves from the pack in a competitive job market. Enjoy our chat with Jody Walton and Danny Beig.
Jody and Danny, welcome to Rooster Radio.
Thank you for having us.
First question is, how did you meet?
Do you want me to take it?
You can take this one.
Well, Jody and I were actually competitors within the industry for quite a long time. We both worked for global corporates. Jody's got around 20 years experience within the HR and the recruitment space. And when I first met Jody, I had around the sort of 6 to 7 mark. But Jody used to run quite a few teams through her global corporates, and one of them was ICT, and I was an ICT recruiter. So I used to come up against her guys quite a lot within the industry.
My guys used to complain about Danny Beig bloody got that job, and Danny Beig, so I used to hear about Danny Beig all the time, yeah.
And then I actually moved out of the recruitment industry more into IT consulting. And at that time, Jody was part of a board called AAA, and we connected there. And then we decided from there, well, we're not competitors anymore, so let's sit down and have a bit of a chat. And two minds that were kind of thinking the same thing got together. And what was that? 30-minute conversation. And then 3 weeks after that, we decided to go into business. And within 3 months, we'd both quit our jobs and we were running Harrison McMillan together. So, interesting story.
Yeah.
There must have been some other things bubbling away for you to catalyse so quickly, and that entrepreneurial spirit must have been in your DNA. I mean, what was going on prior to the start of the business?
Yeah, well, I think for me, I'd previously worked for startup organisations as well, so I'd seen what could happen and what could be achieved. And while I'd moved on to work in kind of global corporations as well, I could take that entrepreneurial mindset to what we were doing. But we also had a meeting of minds about how the recruitment industry was really being bastardised, I guess, by low fees and clients that would go out to multiple agencies, and it was basically a race to the candidate, and whoever got to the candidate first would get the fee. So, you know, we talked about the fact that you don't go to a hairdresser and whoever gives you the best haircut will get your coin. It's about a value service that we provide as recruiters, and we had a lot of experience and a lot of skill in that area. So instead of the current traditional model of charging a fee based on a percentage of someone's salary, I don't know whether you've used recruiters, but we decided that we were going to charge for our expertise and our time and our processes and our technology. And there was never any denying that we saw a really clear path for that opportunity in the market.
And so what was the response from the market when you launched with some new ideas?
I think when we had one of the highest unemployment rates in South Australia that we're going to quit our jobs and start a recruitment firm, people initially thought we were totally crazy. However, there was a need in the market. There was a massive gap between organisations trying to run the recruitment process themselves and then the percentage fee for placement and the value that people got. And pretty much once we launched within the market and we got our message out there that we're doing something different, we've changed the pricing and engagement model, the uptake's been amazing. So we've been going almost 4 years and we've worked with over 120 clients nationally. And out of those, we have almost a 90% return rate of repeat business. So once people use us once, they keep coming back. So the more that we're going and the more the message is getting out there, the bigger the need is.
How was your mindset in the first 6 months? were you really planned and structured and you had a clear idea of what you were doing, or a bit more ad hoc?
I think it was a bit of both. Because we had that corporation experience, you know, we came from structure, we came from planning. We know in terms of sales, it's a numbers game. So the amount of calls you can make, the amount of meetings you can have directly relates into the amount of business that you get. But so that was Danny's job, and my job was to make sure we built something that could be delivered effectively and efficiently and with really strong customer service. So we both took that mindset, because she could sell it, but if it wasn't delivered properly, we would never get another repeat customer. And I could build it, but if she couldn't sell it, then we weren't going to get anywhere either. But we shifted. We did pivot a bit here and there, and we've honed it a little bit. But pretty much the model is how we first thought it should be.
I think one of our key challenges was, because we started up an organisation that was competing against the employees, we didn't have the ability to actually go out and test our ideas, but we literally had to go, we think that we're on the right path and we need to just go out there and just give it a shot. You know, clearly the vision was correct, that there was a need, but that was one of the scary things in the first 6 months of actually going, is this actually a need, or do we just think it's a need as well?
Yeah, and, you know, you guys having a startup as well, when the dollars aren't, you know, the invoices aren't going out the door, the dollars aren't coming in, it can be really easy to go back. So we had a couple of the clients approach us and say, can you do a fee for placement? Because that's what our procurement team want. And we just had to be really firm and say, no, that's not our model. Mm. We believe in something else, even though we had baked beans that week. You know, that's what we did. Mm. It worked out.
What about your workplace culture, which is known as being innovative, like digital detoxes, enforced lunch breaks? Was this something that you guys wanted to introduce from kind of day dot, mm-hmm. or did you throw yourself into it and then this was kind of developed sort of within that kind of first year?
Yeah.
I think the culture's evolved really over the 4 years. Jodie and I's values are obviously very strong with what we want to do, but the digital detoxes has probably been an initiative that Jodie's really implemented in place in the last sort of 6 to 9 months.
Yeah, can you maybe just explain a bit, you know, how you guys approach that?
Sure. Well, given we're in recruitment, and it's still like really it's any service industry, you're on call to your clients constantly. So they pick up the phone and you're there for them. Working in a competitive environment as well, so when clients say, I've gone out to you always feel like you need to be on and you always need to be waiting and watching. And I met a neuroscientist called Dr. Fiona Kerr, who's actually an Adelaide lady. She's from Adelaide Uni. But she's on the global speaker circuit now regarding how technology impacts the brain and your productivity and your stress levels. She's great, actually, if you get the opportunity to bring her in.
Yeah.
She talks about how when there's a ping or, you know, there's a little message come up on the screen, it takes a minimum of 6 seconds to refocus on what you're actually doing, to unpack it and then repack it again. Or if you're working on something more complex, it can take up to 30 seconds after you get that ping to refocus and finish what you're working on. So with us, we know that, you know, we've got constant interruptions and constant distractions. We're an open plan. We're all a slave to the emails. We're a slave to the reading CVs and all the rest of it. So we needed a way to reduce our guys' stress but also increase their productivity. We charge per hour, so our productivity is really, really important. And if the more efficient we are, the more we can charge. So, you know, there is another angle there as well. But I'd also seen, and Danny was the same, with the previous organisations that we worked at, you had to be there at 8 and leave at 6. Like, they were your hours. And it didn't matter what your outputs were. If you were there between 8 and 6, then you were a productive employee or perceived to be. And you'd see people just do a fire drill at 6 o'clock and just, you know, run out the building. But, you know, so we decided when we first started, we're going to focus on outputs rather than inputs. So that's why we put everything in the cloud so people can work from home, they could have flexibility, they could start when they wanted, finish when they wanted. We have 9 a.m. meetings every day, but they can dial in for that if they like. But at the end of the week, they need to be accountable for their output.
Okay, so that's how you measure it, purely on output. And is that Is it kind of like numbers, or like how are you actually measuring the success of this?
So with the that we're doing billable hours, and we're looking at an increase on how billable they are, but also survey results from our clients and our candidates. So they need to be happy with the experience that they've had with our consultants and with ourselves. But also we test our staff's stress levels by surveys. So how do you feel now as opposed to this time last week, as opposed to this time, you know, before we started this particular experiment, I call it. It is a bit of an experiment at this stage, and it's constantly changing. So we benchmarked and then we test against it.
When you meet a client for the first time, a potential client, how do you kind of elicit whether they're going to be a jargonistic person who kind of wants the HR speak, or the really pragmatic business owner or boss who wants to talk output? Do you adjust your own styles accordingly as you're talking to them?
I think being a recruiter, and if you're a good recruiter, one of the key skills that you've got is curiosity as well. So for us, you know, it's about asking the right questions to really understand what that client's looking for and why. If they do want the jargony speak, you can adapt. And, you know, if they do want more the facts and the figures, you can adapt as well. But for us, you know, it's definitely about finding more about their culture, because we can find out so much about the skills that they're looking for. But if we find them a person that doesn't match their culture, they're very unlikely to succeed. So that's kind of where we navigate a lot of the conversations with our clients around, to make sure as their partner we can protect their culture moving forward.
So here's a little test. Rooster Radio is going to employ a full-time person, considering
we can help you with that.
So you have to make a judgment on this culture to this point. I mean, I'm a big believer you can judge a culture in 10 seconds. You know, you walk in the door, you're making assumptions whether that's right or wrong, but those assumptions are true to you. So what would you suggest a Rooster Radio employee needs to have?
Well, I'm going to do the recruiter thing.
Questions?
Questions, more questions. Number one rule in recruitment is never assume. You know, making a snap judgment about somebody or an organisation is where you can definitely fall into, I guess, a little bit of a hole when it comes to finding them the right
you
people.
You can't go wrong with us, so.
So I guess one of the key ways that we can find out about somebody's culture is actually understanding the values of what does your organisation value, what do the owners value, and then actually, what are the behaviours that align with those values? Because, yeah, so for you, the question is then, what's your values?
So here's a question for Andrew. What would Rooster Radio values be?
Maybe we can help you define some values.
Well,
because
a little tidbit about James is his background is actually leadership and consulting. So he eats this stuff up, and he's put me through this before, and I'm trying to actually remember what it was.
Yeah. Well, I don't think we've ever defined. I guess to cut a long story short, so you talk about what are the company's values. In terms of behaviours, what sorts of questions are you asking around behaviours as well?
Yeah, so if one of your values, so one of our values, for example, is energy.
Yep.
So we value energy. We work with clients, we work with candidates, we deal with a variety of different tasks. So for us, if we were interviewing a candidate for our company, we would ask them, so what does the word energy mean to you, and where have you displayed great energy consistently within an organisation? So we know that we know the answers that we hopefully get them to say, but it's also more about, well, what is the values and what do those behaviours look like within that organisation?
Yeah, I think if I can just do a little story about us recently, we interviewed somebody and what we respect curiosity as recruiters. You've got to be curious about other people. And we interviewed somebody and she was great. On paper, she was great. She presented great. She had great experience, very relevant for what we were looking for. And then after the end of an hour and a half, I said, so have you got any questions for me? And she said, no. And that was it. For us, she wasn't going to go any further in the process because she did not demonstrate any curiosity. Whereas with you guys, as Danny said, what's important for you? And then we have ways of testing it without even saying, so tell me about a time you've done X, Y, or Z. It's observation as much as anything else.
Indiscreet interviewing as much as direct interviewing as well.
So that's how you hire, and that's a really good insight. What about when you have a client approach you and
their values as a as an employer might be the opposite end to you guys, completely opposite. Can that still work?
We might not work with them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It depends on why their values are that way. We take our jobs very seriously. As recruiters, we're playing with people's lives. If we get somebody a job, we're literally playing with their lives, especially if they're a sole income earner. So we need to make sure that we're not only protecting our clients' culture, but we're also protecting our candidates and advocating for them, because that misalignment within the candidate and the client is terrible and it's costly for all parties involved. So it depends on why our values don't align. Is it our business models? And are there actual candidates out there that their values might align and we can help them with that? So we don't let biases get involved, but it depends on, what they're looking for.
We have said no to people after a first meeting or after working with them a couple of times, gone, actually, this is not going to work. But I think that's also the beauty of this model is our clients know that we're not going to charge a percentage if we place somebody. We're charging for our time. So, you know, we're not going to put somebody down their throat if we don't think that they're going to be right. And we're going to be very upfront about the issues that candidate might have displayed to us. And vice versa, because it doesn't do our reputation or our client's reputation any good if we put somebody that's just not right for their environment or their culture.
Rooster Radio very much likes to look at the evolution of businesses and, I guess, the humanistic things that go along with running a business. If you elevated yourself to look now at your business or look at your journey, what times were the hardest? You know, when, have there been any times where you questioned what you do when have been the really sort of crutch moments?
Yeah, I think it's ongoing. Mm. I think you can have a really great day and go, yes, this is the best thing that I've ever done. And then the very next day you go, oh, my God, what have I done?
So it's a roller coaster. Every day is a roller coaster.
It's a complete roller coaster.
Yeah. And we're sprinting a marathon while on this roller coaster. And I think one thing that we probably should do more is actually take a step back and celebrate our success and have that helicopter view, because I think that would then – at the hard times, obviously, keep pushing you forward as well.
And we say that a lot, but we never find the
time. Yeah, I know. We're terrible.
Well, Rooster Radio is really good at celebrating our wins.
Yeah, and
probably celebrating wins we haven't even had yet. So maybe we could work with you guys.
We did that the first day. The very first day we went to Chianti and had a beautiful champagne breakfast. That's how we kicked off our first day.
And even in the first couple of months, even before we had won big clients or big deals, we used to have these things called seeds of success where we would just put a little seed on the wall that was basically like, we think that's going to be a potential win that kind of kept us going as well. Yeah.
We've done that so often. We always laugh about we call it potential sheets. So it's potential money. It's not actual real money. We haven't actually won a client, haven't done anything, but, you know, it looks good. Yeah. We're getting around ourselves. We think it might turn into something, but I think you got to get excited.
You do.
And definitely.
We have meetings in the diary with each other every fortnight, but we find it very easy to go, I can see you're busy, I'm busy, let's, you know, and it slips. So we did put an advisory board in place at the beginning of last year, and they hold us very accountable now. So we meet with them every quarter. There's, you know, there's things we need to report back against. You know, we'll go to them going, hey, we've got a plan, I'm going to go into state. And they're like, no.
No. We still have done this,
and we go, oh, all right. So, they keep us focused on the long-term goals.
In both your journeys to this point, who has been important and why?
Interesting. Could be different for
my husband. Both. Definitely. Well, obviously, Jodie's been very important in the success. I'll say Jodie first because obviously we're 50% very important. But for me, definitely my husband, because he's the one that you talk to every night, and he's very patient and very pragmatic, and he's always there to reinforce like the great things that you've done. And he's definitely been so important to me.
Yeah, and I think the advisory board is actually made up of people that we've sought their counsel over that period of time anyway, so we just really formalised it. There was Scott Grigg from Chamonix. He was a client of mine from previously, and, you know, he's a great entrepreneur and done a lot in his own business. Adam Drabs, who's our accountant.
Drabsy.
Yeah, you know Drabsy?
Great golfer, Drabsy.
Yes, he is actually. Yeah. So he's gone into his own business.
He's such a footballer. Yeah.
And Lowen Steele, who sits on a number of boards.
Steele-o.
No, it's Steele-o.
Steele-o, oh, okay.
No, it's not. She's not listening to this. So they're people that we've sought their counsel from the outset, from, you know, what sort of technology do we implement to, you know, how do we tackle this particular situation?
Explain an advisory board. Is it, you know, is it paid? Like, how does it work?
They're voluntary, but we take them to a very nice lunch afterwards, so that keeps them happy. But they are voluntary.
Structured an agenda?
Yeah, we have an agenda. It's minuted and... for them, and I actually said that to them recently, what are you guys getting out of this? But it develops their own skills and consulting skills, and but they find the business and the model fascinating, and actually all three of them are clients. And they've referred us to other clients as well. So I think for them it's just watching us evolve and grow.
Mm.
Yeah.
So we've spoken about your innovative culture, innovative business model. Where is the future of work heading as you guys see it?
Yeah, okay. We looked at each other then going,
I think we both have answers to this one.
Very broad, big question.
Yeah, it's, look, for me, I think it is, there is activity-based working as part of it, but when you look at Adelaide, it's 97% SMEs, small to medium businesses, under 20 staff. So they're not going to have the big budgets to have areas for a breakout, areas to, you know, have hot desks, areas to
sit in the sunshine. What about the Silicon Valley style, you know, like catered offices and all that sort of stuff would be pretty nice.
Yeah, heads. Well, that would be great, actually. Yeah. But I think it's different for every organisation. And for us, we're very health-focused. So, you know, we've got gym memberships, not so much gym memberships. We've got five group personal training sessions that the guys can go into. We've got the, you know, Disconnect project. We've got fresh fruit every week. You know, the team are all really engaged and quite happy and enjoy that sort of thing. We ask them. We say, okay, what do you want, you know, and... within reason, we can give it to them. But we don't have the deep pockets that the Silicon Valley organisations might have to do that.
And what about, I mean, I know, yeah, Silicon Valley obviously has the unlimited funds to do it, but what about kind of things that are more like force change in terms of the evolution of work and culture? How is technology changing things?
It's interesting because when people say the word innovation, their mind instantly goes towards technology. But for us, yes, technology is a major part of our business. But technology is fairly reasonably priced these days and everybody has technology. So we've kind of gone through a bit of planning, like, is technology really the innovation or is it actually the people that run the technology that's going to actually move your organisation forward? For us, yes, we can have great technology and great processes, but investing in the right people, we feel is definitely where the future of work is going to be as well.
Technology allows us to deliver our model to our client base and to our staff that it's not the driver.
Are you receiving any feedback, whether it's formal or just anecdotal, regarding some of the practices that are now entrenched in workplaces that were revolutionary at the time? So the open plan, style of office, the one day from home, are the metrics showing that it's beneficial?
Yeah, I think there's been a bit of a swing. The pendulum, as it does, has swung back a little bit and people are going, is open plan as productive as it should be? Open plan was a bit of a cost driver back in the noughties.
So what was the incentive?
For more space, for less space, for more people in the same amount of space. So, beforehand, whenever it had an office, you might be in a bit of a 10x10 room, but now that can fit three people in that space if it's all open plan, shared resourcing, all that sort of thing as well. So, whereas now you look at open plan and people are stressed, then, you know, they can be not productive, it's easy to get caught up in chat. And that's why one of the reasons we were like, right, okay, so how do we actually minimise that? Not the chat, we like that, but when they're focused, and they're not being distracted, but still feel like they're part of a team. So it is a balance. And I think if you look at the various generations, they have their own kind of core personality traits. And the new generations coming through, like Gen Ys and Gen Zs, are very similar to kind of the baby boomers and the way that they behave within an organisation. Let me know if I'm going to kind of...
No, this is brilliant.
Cool. So, you know, I thought that it'd be really easy to get hot desking with the Gen Ys and the Gen Z because they're flexible, right? They're easy. No. They like being there at the same time every day and they like being at their desk. They like their photos.
So selfish of them, really.
So annoying. No, they're not. they've got, you know, they have their photos on there. They're very, they've got a lot of ownership over their space. They might be doing five things while they're sitting at their desk, but they still want their desk. So we need to make sure that we're catering to that. And that's the trick. It's finding out what everyone as an individual wants. And not you can't cater to everyone's individual needs, but making sure that you're giving the majority as best as you can.
I think also where some organisations go wrong with that flexible working is not actually understanding how they measure outputs. So as much as flexible working and this hot desking has been around for so long, in the majority of organisations that we meet with, their processes probably aren't mature enough to actually go, you know, work the hours you need, work where you need to work because we can measure outcomes.
Yeah, and staying in touch, you've still got to connect to them. So if one of the guys are working from home, like I'll give them a call once or twice a day. Hey, how are you going? You know, just so they, because it's easy to forget people when they're not in the room.
Mm.
So it's making sure that, you know, they still feel connected to the office and the people there, even if they're not present.
I did hear of some businesses that are having all sorts of issues that people couldn't find people in large buildings, open plan buildings, you know, multi-story. And so they had to then go and create an app, which then was like a geolocator, which showed you.
Oh, my
you
God, so they were tracking them.
Well, yeah, in the building.
They chipped their employees.
Yeah.
Probably taking a bit too far.
But it's. I guess what you're talking about is that rebalancing a little bit to, you know, 5 years ago it was all about let's just get open plan flexibility. That's what people want. And then there might be just a moderating aspect to that where it may not all be like that.
Yeah, that's right. And it might well be that, you know, as space becomes more of a premium, you know, you will only have 60% of the people working at their desk at any one time and 40% working from home. But the practices need to be in place with outputs and communication.
Can you make some generalisations about different generations of, you know, potential staff or clients that will be placed? I mean, the young people that you're speaking to now, is there a difference from 5 years ago? 20 years ago.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the training programs we actually run is managing the multi-generational workforce and around the different behaviours that they display as well. So you've recently just rolled that out for behind closed doors.
Yeah, I think a lot of organisations, particularly because baby boomers are staying in the workforce a little bit longer, you know, with the GFC and some of their super got wiped out, they're, you know, they're staying a little bit longer within organisations, but people think they're going to kind of be there forever. And so what we do with organisations is we map where their generations are on their org chart and then we highlight areas of concern. So there might be a business unit that's completely made up of baby boomers and they've got no succession planning coming through. Also, baby boomers tend to stay with organisations for about 15 years on average, whereas Gen Ys, they're about 3. So if you're going to grab them, you've got to grab them early and you've got to engage them quickly. So there's various tips that we can give organisations on how to engage the various generations.
Yeah, so there's a lot of advisory work that you guys are really doing within this process.
Yeah,
and I think what we find with the generations a lot of the times when clients come to us, it's about the baby boomers and the succession planning with the retirement. It's about the Gen Ys and what they really want. But you've got this Generation X, which is becoming like the middle child of generations that's being a little bit forgotten because the baby boomers aren't moving out, so they're not having as much opportunities to move up. And then you've got these real Generation Ys that companies are so concerned about keeping happy that just want to, you know, they want the CEO position right now. So it is about, you know, really looking at it holistically. And I think you said, what do they want? Is actually asking your employees, what do they actually want, rather than just assuming based on their generation or their years in the job or their age, what they want.
Yeah. I mean, people are also inherently the same. They want to be recognised. They want to be appreciated. You know, they want to be thanked. Mm. So as long as you don't forget that kind of key human element, then the rest is just tinkering. Mm.
It was interesting. A recent survey came out that you talk about, like, Silicon Valley and the sleeping pods and the food, where the number one motivator for people within an organisation was actually progression. So not promotion, but progression, ability to learn and grow and develop, which I think a lot of organisations are forgetting. It's more about the benefits rather than actually a career trajectory for a lot of their employees.
Yeah, and don't forget the middle children, the Generation X.
What about the impact of kind of the on-demand economy and how that's changing employment? How are you guys seeing that?
In terms of consulting and contracting or...
All of the above, just from your observations of being in this employment space, how is it affecting recruiters? How is it affecting the way people are approaching their staffing? Is it changing at all?
Yes and no, I'd say. I think, you know, with the onset of systems like LinkedIn, people feel like they could be, you know, anyone could be a recruiter. But actually, you know, we train our staff in bullying techniques where, you know, there's search strings that can be a page long, and that's how, you know, that's how you actually get in and interrogate the system and find people. And, you know, there's a skill involved in actually utilising online databases, public databases like LinkedIn. So people tend to try it themselves and then go, all right, we actually need some skill set here and some expertise around it.
Do you check Facebook?
Yes.
Absolutely.
What is it? What can it tell you? Like, what do you look for?
Well, we have a term for our clients called strategic sourcing, where if they, you know, savvy candidates generally just aren't going to apply for a role on Seek. So we'll actually proactively go out and source the right person. But we do like to use the term strategic stalking as well, because it gets a little bit stalker-like at some time. But, you know, we talked about before about indirect interviewing, which is assessing all the selection criteria via every part of the recruitment process, including what they put out on the web. You know, what is their picture? What are they posting out there? How locked down is there? What happens when you Google them? Mm. What comes up?
You should Google yourself. It's really quite interesting. You probably
do.
No. Well, 70% of candidates will Google you before they come for an interview as well. So candidates like to do the strategic stalking of their employers too.
I'd be interested. I'm not sure on the legalities of this, so excuse my ignorance, but like, do you keep data then? Like, do you have like spreadsheets with, you know, just some comments, or how do you maintain that data?
We have a database that we contain a lot of information. From a legalities point of view, with any recruitment process, you've got to select a selection of essential and desirable requirements. So the notes that we write down about candidates is whether they meet or don't meet those essential requirements. We use a bit of a traffic light approach. So green meets requirements, amber meets some, red doesn't. So that's kind of how we keep all the information on our candidates.
There's a funnel that we go through. So first of all, it's your resume, and that resume might trigger us to look at LinkedIn. Well, usually LinkedIn, but then it might trigger us to check Facebook, Google. And then from there we'll get on the telephone to them and see how they communicate, what they're, you know, how they sound, how personable they are. And we make notes and everything, and our client gets to see all the notes as well. Then we'll send them a video screening link, so they actually record themselves then answering a number of questions. They send that back to us. We make notes on that. Then we might meet them face-to-face, make notes on that. So, yeah, people are being assessed on a whole range of things through the whole process. But it's got to be that thorough, because you could be investing $100,000 a year in somebody. So it's a lot of money to just throw away if you get it wrong.
And what about, I guess, the industry of recruitment? Where is it at? It seems like it's pretty tough in terms of competition. It seems like different agencies have very different approaches. You see some very aggressive recruiters out there. You know, some don't have a great reputation, to be honest. Where do you see the industry at the moment?
We're probably a little bit impartial when it comes to that, obviously, because we are recruiters. So we think that obviously recruiters are a critical element within the industry, but the way that the business models and the way that people engage external recruitment, we personally feel that that needs to change. We actually recently just won Most Innovative Recruitment Agency in Australia at the Seek SAR Awards because of our new business model. And I think for that, for us, that encourages us that the industry does need to change. In regards to the external recruitment agencies, from speaking with our clients, it does seem like there's a big gap between the value that they receive and I guess the fees as well. So we kind of feel like it's on a bit of an edge. We're seeing more and more competitors come in with our business model, and obviously they've seen the success of what we've done, and I think within the next 5 years we will see that changing and evolving. Same with about 5 years ago, a lot of organisations brought recruitment in-house with LinkedIn and social media. Technology was there to support them, where we're actually seeing a lot of organisations now actually outsource their recruitment to organisations like us or providers on like a retainer monthly, because you do need that specialist knowledge rather than just having that one person in-house facilitating everything end-to-end.
So do you kind of feel like it's almost at that disruptive point where you guys are bringing in a new model, the older models are being proven to be ineffective? We're kind of at that tipping point.
Yeah, I think I like to say it's recruitment as a service, like, you know, how you can purchase technology as a service or social media as a service, or it's recruitment as a service. So it's a very relationship-driven industry as well. So there'll be a lot of the old school that are still being utilised for their networks, but, you know, the database isn't as private as it used to be. We see that with LinkedIn now, and anybody with enough skill set can tap into the right talent.
I did hear a quote, and I'm probably going to butcher it, and it's something along the lines of people overestimate what they can achieve in a year and underestimate what they can achieve in 5 years. In 5 years, what would an awesome, successful HR business look like for you?
We like to say that we're planning on global domination, which is probably the opposite of underestimating what you can do in 5 years, I think. But for us, we're actually kind of at that turning point in our career. We've got our advisory board meeting next week that we're going to really nut it out, because we're South Australian owned and operated at the moment, but 20% of our clients are nationally. So do we launch it nationally? There's a variety of different things, but we're kind of at that tipping point to go, okay, well, what does the next 5 years look like? You know, how much more of Adelaide can we get across? We think there's a lot, but it's also there's opportunities to build out our services into more of the HR consultancy. It's a variety of different things. So
yeah, it could.
I don't know.
Yeah. And we're lucky right now because we're getting approached, because we've won a couple of awards and we've got a good profile. You know, people are approaching us to work with us or partner with us from interstate, and you know, that's a really cool place to be in. But we need to make sure that there is a 5-year plan, because we're nearly at the end of the first 5-year plan, being at the 3.5-year mark. So now we need to review that and go, okay, where did we go? How do we get there? Where do we want to be next? So, yeah, we like to be fairly agile and not lock ourselves in too much as well.
And in the next 5 years, are there any parts of the funnel that you've described from the moment that you win a client and then place a candidate, are there any chunks of that that will be truly disrupted by technology, so could be replaced by systems?
We like to talk about hologram technology.
Yeah, so there's with AI, and I know that's the buzzword at the moment, but I think that could play a real key place in the recruitment process. So we could be in different offices in Adelaide and actually be sitting here having a conversation like that, which saves time, efficiency, productivity, all of those things that people are trying to get more of. I don't think it ever takes away the energy, though, of, you know, the real energy of a human being. And I think you can get a lot more actually sitting in front of somebody. But in those times where you can't, the technology will be there that you feel like you're as good as.
So are you looking at these new technologies? And
we actually implemented pre-recorded video technology in our business almost 4 years ago when we first started, which was a way that we could send a link to the candidate and they could pre-record themselves answering questions, so that when we presented the client with the resume of the candidate and our notes on how we felt that they aligned with their values of their organisation, the salary, they also got a 5-minute video to see and hear the candidates. So that was kind of the first introduction. That's becoming a little bit more common technology now, where definitely looking at what's next is definitely part of our plan. And Jody's on the board of AAAA as well, which is an IT industry body, which provides a lot of connections around technology.
Yeah, so, you know, there's the key technology vendors are on that, like Microsoft and NEC and, you know, some of, and they're doing some really, really cool stuff. So, you know, we get to see that firsthand, what they're doing, and go, how can we apply that?
Like virtually fire someone?
That would be nice, wouldn't it?
Put the goggles on and then get sacked. By the way.
I still wouldn't like to do that. I'd be like, Jody, can you please do that?
That's my job.
Being part of a recruiter, yeah. The worst part of your job is telling the 99 out of the 100 people that they didn't get the job. So, yeah.
Or do you have to fire people
on behalf of our clients?
Yeah.
On behalf of our clients, we will do some performance development.
Yeah.
But I don't think actually been asked to fire them.
Traditional recruitment agencies, when we managed contracting books, so when you had contractors that you find for an organisation that was employed, you had to be involved in those discussions. But because most of what we do at the moment is in the permanent recruitment side, we do temp as well. We don't get involved too much in that, but we may keep evolving that.
Ask if there was a moment where you were kind of affected by having to to say to someone they didn't get the job, or, you know, do you ever get that?
Definitely, because we're all human as well and we like people most of the time. But one of my first jobs was as a HR manager over in the UK, and I had to fire someone and she started crying and I started crying, and it was a disaster. It really was. but, you know, if you like people, you don't want to hurt people. But sometimes, they need to seek, we like the term seek excellence elsewhere, because if it's not right for the employer, it's not going to be right for the employee. They'll be having a rough time as well. So relief is often the emotion that they feel once it's been cut loose.
Yeah, we use the term redirection instead of rejection.
Yeah, they think they're going this way. We go, nope, you're going that way.
Have you got any stories of people who have handled redirection not so well?
It's probably not stories for radio, actually. It's probably a lot more
we can share,
you know, maybe daytime, midday movie style stories that's gone on. But, you know, people are connected. These are their careers as well, especially sort of in the 2009s when there was a lot of redundancies that people were really trying to, get back into the workforce. That was a trying time for candidates and as a recruiter, because there were so many great people on the market that, yeah, they could do the job, but the client had 10 people to choose from at the time. So it's hard to give redirect somebody when actually they do meet all the requirements.
Yeah.
We find that a challenge.
You don't often find too many people with the ego to think that they are the best. You actually see people at a very vulnerable time because they know that there's competition. You know, they start to really look at their own weaknesses and their own development areas. And they are really quite fragile at all levels when they're applying for a role. So, you know, you've just got to be really aware of that and treat them with respect and be as honest as you can. And we try and give people feedback that they could take with them. Often that's not possible when the client just says, look, you know, it's just someone better. But, you know, we do what we can so they go away with something.
There's a lot of large corporates now as well from a legal point of view that will not actually supply any candidate feedback. So to give somebody feedback and say from a legal point they can't, that's challenging.
Yeah.
Just because from a legal standpoint they could question it, just global, bigger organisations just put
the US,
more policies in place.
Yeah, when they get sued for everything, like reference checks and that sort of thing. So,
So as a candidate, and this is a very practical question again, how do I make myself stand out from the 10 other people who might be skilled in a similar way to me?
Yeah, so tailor your application. So don't just have that cookie cutter standard one that you send to everything. Make sure you do a cover letter, which, you know, might pull out a little bit more about you and your experience and why you're right for that role. Follow up with a phone call. You know, make sure that you get to speak to the person that's assessing the resumes, because I always remember the people that ring me as well, rather than, you know, just a piece of paper. It just adds a little bit of context to it.
I was going to ask, have you had any quirky things which stand out as strategies someone's employed to put themselves forward that you can remember?
Quirky strategies can sometimes work or really go against you as well, because as much as recruiters, we do love the quirky strategies clients are still very traditional. I can't really think of anything quirkiness that's really worked. There's been some good things in the media about the Heineken ad that came out from the way that quirky things that organisations have been doing in their recruitment process. Yeah. What about you?
No, I'm just thinking people because our office is open plan. We don't have the interview rooms in our office. We've got them downstairs. But the people that kind of go, open up the door and go, hi, I just thought I'd introduce myself there. Have some respect for. So I think if it's a quirky company, if you've researched and it's a company that's really outside the square, then you could think about doing it without being too intrusive. But, you know, we're talking Adelaide. It's relatively conservative. Follow a process, but make sure that you, you know, make yourself as relevant for the role as possible.
Yeah. Follow details. I think where a lot of candidates do go wrong is just not paying attention to the instructions. You know, if an ad says apply in Word, you know, there's generally a reason for why, you know, getting things in on time, being responsible, like being responsive and being nice all the time. We find out, you know, if we call them, sometimes the way people answer their phones, their tones can change quite quickly when they find out what it's about. You know, it's about having a consistent behaviour and actually displaying that as well.
Like people can be rude to the PA or the receptionist, but then on their best behaviour with us. So, you know, people are talking. So, you know, make sure if you like that, then you'll soon get found out. But, just make sure that you put your best foot forward with everything you do.
I think candidates forget that they're being assessed. It's just not the interview. They're being assessed through the whole process from where to go. So it's being mindful of that, where I think that's where a lot of people can slip up. Google yourself is really important. We did have a candidate that when we Googled him, his LinkedIn profile said he was God, which was interesting. And he was nice. And, you know, so we just called him and said, hey, look, this is a recommendation that we think that might help you in your job applications. And he had totally forgotten that he'd even created that one as a joke, but he had two up there, which is an interesting one.
Just, you know, for a period of time, you might want to take some of the more questionable photos down from Facebook, or, you know, that could be a great laugh for the mates, but like, would a potential employer want to see it? So, you know, just kind of review your life from the outside looking in.
But then also don't totally blanket your personality, because people will hire you for your personality. It's a fine line, and what one client wants could be totally different to what another client wants. So also not having the same resume, the same approach for everything, but being really adaptable to the company's culture and values as well.
And don't give up. There's a lid for every pot, my mother used to say.
I was going to say, you must come across some fairly despondent people who just feel like they're beating their head against a brick wall.
Yeah, it is tough. It is tough out there at the moment. We do have the highest unemployment rate on the mainland, and but people, you can't drop their heads. They've got to. It's a full time job, looking for a full time job as well. So just keep going. You'll find it. You'll find it.
I think it's that time, Andrew. Rapid fire.
Oh God.
A very poorly executed segment that we do every time. And Andrew Montesi always fails to contribute. And so the idea is that we ask a rapid series of questions. Feel free to be short in your answers. The only proviso is you have to have an opinion, so you can't sit on the fence. And then the rest is kind of just make it up as we go along. So I'll kick off. The cheesiest song in your playlist?
Wake Me Up Before You Go-Go Wham.
Oh, Jodie's got a great video of me singing Bon Jovi.
I do.
Living
I can
on a
show
prayer
it to you, actually. It's awesome.
Oh, God, that's hysterical.
Yeah, we could play the audio into it.
It is hysterical. I love it.
Your first jobs?
I was a HJ's girl, so Hungry Jack's for 3.5 years was mine.
Yeah, service deli at Coles.
The one bit of your job that you just go, I really don't want to do this.
Redirection of candidates. Each time, it doesn't matter how many times, I need to pump myself up to do it.
Invoicing, even though it pays the bills, is really annoying.
What's the most creative job title that you've come across?
God.
God, yeah, that was a good one. Well, we created our own. So we call our team recruitment partners rather than recruitment consultants. We thought that was pretty creative. Maybe, kind of. I don't know.
I've seen recruiters calling themselves more like talent acquisition specialists.
The moment when you have had a bit of a fight with each other, got a bit scratchy with each other.
Yeah. Last week. Oh God, let's not.
I think the thing is, I spend more time with Jody than I do with my husband, so it is like being in a partnership.
But we fight differently too, because you don't want to be in the same room.
I'm a sulker. I just sulk, and I just stop talking. Yeah.
So hard to deal with that. any dream clients that you're not working with at the moment that you'd love to work with?
Oh, God, there's so many. Mm. There's absolutely fantastic businesses, but I can't sit on the fence, can I? Yeah, Big Star. Yeah. That's a good one.
Competitive process to select our HR recruitment strategy.
I don't know. We went to I don't know whether I should say this, but we went to Melbourne. No, was it Sydney recently? And we went to Macquarie Park. I don't know whether you guys have been there, but some of the organisations there are just amazing. It's just all that, the HQ for the large globals. It's just like, them. But, you know, we love working with the SMEs here in Adelaide as well.
Yeah, and the innovation and the smaller startups. There's so many businesses out there you don't even know exists.
Our smallest client was 2, and we've doubled them over the last 3 years to 4. So, you know, that's something that's really cool too.
Last one from me. If you weren't in recruitment, what would you be doing?
I've gravitated quite a lot to the sales and marketing. So the marketing side of things, maybe.
Let me clarify. Dream a bit bigger. What would be the ultimate thing you could choose? Like, not just something that you might have done already or good at, like.
Travel writer. Just travel writer. Go around the world, just chilling.
Danny's still thinking.
That'd be nice, but as long as I could take my dog.
She might still select marketing, Andrew.
Marketing the travel writing.
Yeah, maybe. I'll just follow Jody around.
She's still following me.
My last question is a book that's had a profound effect on you. Or movie if you're struggling to think of a book.
How to Win Friends and Influence People was probably the first business book that I read, and that's always stayed with me. And our business support officer, she's just started reading that. I think that's got a lot of weight behind it.
Mm. Over the break, I read The Art of Not Giving a Fuck. And that was really good. Yeah, I recommend that one. Yeah.
Did you learn anything?
The book is
learning how to not give working out what's important to you and what's not important.
Have you changed one thing as a result of reading it?
Yeah, we had a fire over it. No.
We probably won't open that one.
It's one of the many. I didn't give a fuck.
She's already learned it. She read that ages ago, obviously. No, but it's all, you know, it's trying to really define your values and then behaving appropriately from there. So not giving a fuck, but with respect. Mm. Yeah. I recommend it.
Well, on a very direct and simple end, thank you to Danny and Jody for coming onto Rooster Radio and sharing what is an industry that is in transition and changing, but for two people who have clearly got ahead of the curve and are trying new things and clearly winning awards. You're on, you know, Sky News TV, so you've
and Rooster Radio.
And Rooster Radio. I'm wondering whether your audio will be embedded on the front page of your website, a bit like the Sky News interview. So
I can talk to the web developers about that.
Definitely.
Put it on my list.
So, no, thanks again for giving up your time and really enjoyed it.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you so much for having us.
Cheers.
Thanks for listening to our chat with Jody Walton and Danny Beig. For more on Harrison McMillan, visit harrisonmcmillan.com.au. And if you want the heads up about Rooster Radio events and more info about our guests and interviews, sign up to our mailing list at roosterradio.biz. We're also on Facebook at facebook.com/roosterradiohq.